This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The relationship between U.S. Steel and the Granite City Works steel mill has been rocky for years. Most recently, the company announced it would stop sending steel to the plant, then reversed that decision a few weeks later. Now the plant is seemingly safe from closure until 2027, but the local United Steelworkers Union wants more security than that. In a moment, we'll talk with Craig McKee, the president of the local chapter of the United Steelworkers. But to get us caught up with what's happened in the last several years, here's STLPR Metro East reporter Will Bauer. Will, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Will, you've been covering the U.S. Steel and Granite Works City steel mill story since fall of 2023. Take us back to that year, and in particular, to the stoppage of operation of Granite City Works blast furnace.
So at the start, it was a temporary stoppage of the second blast furnace. The first blast furnace had been turned off in 2019, and U.S. Steel had said at the time there was another labor story going on. That was the United Auto Workers strike. So if you remember, the General Motors facility in Wentzville was one of the first ones to go on strike and shut down. That was what U.S. Steel had said had led to a drop in demand for steel. Now, of course, steelworkers in Granite City would say that's a bunch of hogwash. But anyway, that was what they had said. So it was first temporary. And then a couple months later, it turned into a more permanent idling of the blast furnace. And so since then, there's been no steel produced. Just steel slabs have been getting shipped in to Granite City to be processed.
Mm-hmm. And what were the immediate consequences of that stoppage of the blast furnace that you've just referred to?
So initially, right, it was just going to be a few hundred workers that were laid off because of the temporary blast furnace idling. But when it became more of a permanent move, those temporary layoffs would have turned into more permanent layoffs. So that would have led to the facility right now employs generally 800 to 900 employees. So a reduction in force, I guess, is the easiest way to answer that question.
Nippon Steel Corporation entered the picture in December that same year, in 2023. How did that come about, Will?
So as all of that was happening, right, we're making the decisions with the blast furnaces. There is a company in Cleveland called Cleveland Cliffs. It's an American company that had made an unsolicited, out-of-the-blue offer for the entire portfolio of U.S. Steel at about $7 billion. U.S. Steel had said no. And over the course of the next couple of months, a bunch of different companies had kind of expressed some interest. And the winner was the Japanese company, Nippon. Mm-hmm. And they would have ended up taking over the company earlier this year because it would have got caught up in political discussions and elections, so on and so forth. But yeah, mm-hmm. Nippon was the winner of that bid for U.S. Steel.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reaction to the news about Nippon, you know, at that time?
Oddly enough, there was pretty firm consensus that most, not only from the steelworkers to American politicians, weren't a huge fan of it. So from the steelworkers' perspective, they had preferred an American company, a company like Cleveland Cliffs, who they felt had a much better track record in terms of labor, and they had problems with the Japanese company because of they had been flooding the market with some cheap steel, right? And so that was the steelworkers' perspective. But from the politicians' perspective, there was bipartisan agreement from Joe Biden, then president, Democratic nominee Kamala Harris, and President Trump, the Republican, who would have said, we kind of have, you know, we may agree with the union on some of their concerns, but also national security concerns. We don't want such a vital American industry owned by a foreign foreign company, even if that foreign company is based in what probably many people would consider a pretty good ally in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Now, bring us up to speed then with what has been happening in the last 6 months or so with U.S. Steel and Granite City Works.
Basically, the conversation in Granite City has very much been centered around what is the future, if there is any, long-term in Granite City. So we would have first learned in June that U.S. Steel and their new corporate ownership based out of Tokyo would have committed to not cutting any of the processing in Granite City Works for 2 years. Now, that decision was later changed in September, which is what you referenced. They had said, hey, we're going to actually quit sending in steel to be processed. This would have happened in December. and we're just going to maintain the status quo for a while. Mm-hmm. But 2 weeks later, they end up reversing that decision. So lots of back and forth for the steelworkers in Granite City over the last couple of months.
Yeah. So you covered a rally, Will, in Granite City, and that was just last month, where steelworkers were asking for long-term commitments. What were those?
So right now in the national security agreement that was signed by the federal government and the companies, it carves out a future for Granite City, but only until 2027. For the rest of the U.S. steel portfolio that is now controlled by the Japanese company, it says until 2035. So that was a signal to a lot of the folks in Granite City that they may not have a long-term future. So to answer your question, a future beyond 2027, and they would also love to see an investment, because also in that national security agreement, they would have outlined a ton of investment the Japanese would be making in all the U.S. steel facilities. And for whatever reason, Granite City has never been on one of those lists. Mm-hmm. So they would love some modernization. They would love some, we're talking like millions and billions of dollars for some of these facilities, some of that money to trickle down to Granite City so that they could carve a future for themselves out beyond 2027.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking about the present and the future, Craig McKee has personal and direct insight into that. He's the president of the Granite City chapter of the United Steelworkers. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So as a starting point, Craig, and for those who aren't familiar with this, what is the range of work that has been done at the steel mill in Granite City Works?
Prior to October of 23, we were a fully integrated steel making process. And then we have finishing lines that we run through a hot strip mill, cold strip mill, pickle line, and a triple G coating line. Since we shut down the second blast furnace in October of 23, we've just been running our finishing mills on slabs that are being sent to us from our sister companies, Gary Works and the Mon Valley Works in Pennsylvania.
So this finishing work, Craig, why is that not enough?
Well, based on U.S. Steel telling us around the September 5th time frame that they weren't going to continue to send slabs here to Granite for us to process, we've all been scratching our heads on why they're not including our capacity from our blast furnaces, because they're obviously not being able to make as many slabs as they need in the corporation, even though they say they're at full capacity. So we would see that it would be easy to fix their problem by at least firing up our B blast furnace that, has only been down since 23.
Mm-hmm. So with this uncertainty recently about the future of Granite City Works, you were told it would be shut down. And this is something, Will, that you've mentioned a little earlier. Then just weeks later, that decision was reversed. Craig, how has that experience been for you and your membership?
For about a two-week period there before they reversed their decision, it was just more terrible news. We've been, since going back to at least 19 when we had the first furnace shut down through 22 when they announced a possible sale of the blast furnaces to SunCoke and all the way up till today. That's just more impact financially on our workers that are currently working here now, because without producing, we lose quite a bit of money in regards to production incentives and things like that.
So. Mm-hmm. What have you been hearing from your union members about what they're feeling, what they're thinking? What are they maybe mapping out for their future steps individually?
For most of them, We've lost a lot of hope because we've been dealing with this stuff for so long here at Granite City, and I don't think any of them have a lot of hope or hold out anymore just because this national security agreement actually shows us till 27. Most of them are looking for other work, and they believe that come 2027 that we might not have jobs here anymore after that.
Is there any reason to have hope? You're continuing to fight a good fight. What is it that is helping you to continue in these efforts?
Well, we know B Blast Furnace, the company's been telling us all along since they idled it that, you know, $25, $30 million and 12 to 14 weeks they could have it up and running again. We also know that, you know, if the tariffs drive the price of steel up, that U.S. Steel in the past has been known to try to seize on that every time they can get the opportunity to make some money. So we still believe that a good answer to their problem would be going ahead and restarting our B blast furnace. And as history's shown, when we get those opportunities, a lot of times that keeps our torches going longer, so to say.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back very shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from the St. Louis Public Library Foundation. During these challenging times, free access to digital resources is a necessity. You can help our community stay connected. Support your St. Louis Public Library at slpl.org.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. We're talking this hour about continuing uncertainty at the Granite City Works steel mill. Here to do that with us is Granite City Steelworkers Union President Craig McKee and STLPR Metro East reporter Will Bauer. Will, earlier you had mentioned national security, and so politics, like this all comes into play. What role did the Trump administration play in all of what we've been talking about?
So at first, right, they had been opposed to the deal. I think many people would say the state of Pennsylvania probably played a really big role in the Trump administration's willingness to say, hey, we'll block this deal. Big swing state, right? Steelworkers Union in Pennsylvania, probably a huge stakeholder, right, in local politics. But earlier this year, right, they would have kind of went back on, or the Trump administration would have went back on their words after they felt like, you know, the Japanese had vowed to make so many billions of dollars of investment at the U.S. steel facilities. For whatever reason, Granite City is not one of them. And maybe second portion of this is that from best we can tell, based on some pretty vague comments from the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, they would have at some point exercised their what's known as a golden share. Essentially, that's just a veto power that is negotiated in that national security agreement that Craig was just mentioning that allows them to maybe veto a further idling, closing, or sale of Granite City Works until 2027. Mm-hmm. So when U.S. Steel had said, hey, we're going to, you know, quit shipping in steel, from best we can tell, the Trump administration at some point would have said, hey, you can't do that. That's in our national security agreement. You've got to, you know, honor, you know, this agreement that we would have gone into.
Mm-hmm. So the plant is seemingly safe from closure until 2027, which is not that far down the road. Craig, to what extent does the Trump administration, you know, deserve credit for continuing operations at Granite City Works?
Well, I know I'm speaking for my membership and myself. We're definitely thankful that you know, we got captured in this national security agreement till 2027, but, you know, we've stood behind our international from the beginning of this process in the sense that we think President Trump probably should have not approved the sale, because here we are today, 3 months after the sale, have we not got at least our finishing stuff under this agreement till 27, 3 months after the deal was done, they was planning on taking us out. So that none of that could have happened if this sale wouldn't have went through. U.S. Steel was a profitable company at the time. I understand they had to go into the strategic review process because of Cliffs making an offer. But as the international said from all along, U.S. Steel was a sufficient company, and the fear of, you know, Nippon trying to bring their product into the States, being a major player in the steel in the States, that was going to be a problem. And today, we know they're not making enough slabs, and the Trump administration looked at that as an idol. So we thank President Trump and the folks in the administration that at least held U.S. Steel and Nippon to this agreement. But for the long term, we don't see any investment coming our way. They're looking at building a new mini mill facility somewhere in 28 to the tune of about $1 billion. You know, we feel like they should be that investing that here at Granite City and taking care of the people that's put a lot of money in their pockets and, you know, gave a lot of hard work and a lot of time away from their homes and family life to make sure that this company was successful over the years. And, you know, we're going to continue to make that argument.
Mm-hmm. Craig, earlier you had mentioned you're speaking for membership. And when we discuss unions, there is sometimes an oversimplification that happens when people say union leadership, you know, supports Democrats and rank-and-file members support Republicans. Does that play out at all in what happens with your local chapter?
Sure. Politics is always a tough conversation for many reasons. What we try to look at here is what we call our core values. There isn't much we do here locally in support of, you know, what we could do for political support. We do know the International does support folks, but it's based around the core values, retirement, you know, health care, retiree health care, all the components of what, you know, really the union's there to represent us on. So our membership here definitely are hoping that the Trump administration through the Golden Chair might intervene on this one. But we're trying to do the things that get the right messages to folks in the administration to make sure that they're taking a look to see that, you know, there's not something they may be able to do if they feel like they need to advise U.S. Steel or Nippon to add capacity mm-hmm. in the United States.
And that capacity, I mean, it sounds like bottom line, what you and your members want is to work, plain and simple. What do you hope the Trump administration will do going forward?
Well, in our current situation, even though they've made the commitment to ship the slabs back to Granite, it just makes us wonder where either they're going to turn away customers or backlog metal to the Calvert facility, or, you know, what we've been fearful of all along, are they going to get slabs outside and get them in here to the States instead of adding capacity to the company here? Mm-hmm.
Craig, you are talking with us about something that is a news story. And on our show, we want to try to make it very clear to people that what we're talking about related to the news has to do with people's lives. And when I asked a question about, you know, bottom line and being able to work, you talked about retirement and you talked about healthcare. And these are needs that people have. What is your personal history with Granite City, and why is this all important to you, what we've been discussing, beyond the position that you occupy with the steelworkers?
Yeah, I hired in 1997 at the Coke Batteries, and, you know, been an employee of this company, went through the change when U.S. Steel took over in 2003, and you know, we've fought long and hard and given up pay and all kinds of stuff to have the benefits we have today. So that's, you know, the main reason that, you know, we don't want to see any of that go away, because people have built lives around, you know, what we've worked for over the years. But This place has been making steel for over 100 years. It not only built the city of Granite City, but it's built a lot of the outlying communities around here also. So just the thought of not making steel here in Granite City and the impact of what that means, not only for our members, but the communities around it's already been a lot of devastation, but without this mill here in some form or fashion, it's definitely going to get a lot harder for the communities and our membership.
Mm-hmm. Craig McKee is president of the Granite City chapter of the United Steelworkers, and Will Bauer is STLPR's Metro East reporter. Craig and Will, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Lynn.
Yep, thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Olivia Mizell.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.